and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John. That was a very unnecessary pause, and I didn't like that.
I think the eye contact sold it, though.
Yeah, oh. I hope everyone that's listening to this feels as uncomfortable as I was.
We are here. We are back. We are here to talk about minute 2 through 3 of Dune Part 2. In this minute, we get voiceovers galore. We are in exposition, just central right now.
We won't have nearly as much to talk about this minute as we did last minute, though. So thanks for bearing with us for a longer episode right off the rip.
Right, right. Yeah, it's just, this one should go fairly quick. But last minute, we left off with Erlon continuing, and she said, "But my father's," and that's where she stopped. And we pick right back up with this: "Always been guided by the calculus of power." So the full quote: "But my father's always been guided by the calculus of power." Now, we get to see who exactly this looming figure that wrapped the award, the medal, around Raban's neck. And why don't you walk us through who this is, John.
I mean, it's everyone's favorite fat bastard. Not fat bastard, but Vladimir Harkonnen.
Yeah.
This time, with featuring life support.
The Dune Part 2 Baron Harkonnen action figure would come with all these little plastic bits, right?
Yeah, and you would fucking choke on all of them.
he's got a bunch of...
Do you think he would have the kung fu grip?
Oh, yeah, he has to. He has to, man.
Rabin definitely would.
No, yeah. Well, he's got to carry that beefy sword that he used to chop all the heads off at the end of the last movie.
Single swipe, just...
The Baron's got a bunch of floating accessories after the poison attack. He's done with the goo. His recovery has progressed from the goo stage to the floating orb stage, I guess, in whatever future medicine this is.
I can't explain Harkonnen medicine, so fucking who knows?
I'm sure there was at some point, we don't see this on the screen, but there was the rat taped to a cat a portion of his recovery process. Thank you, David Lynch, for giving us that visual. So he floats on back, and Raban stands up, salutes the troops, and the camera cuts out, and we see there is a whole hell of a lot of Harkonnens out here.
We see thousands of them.
Yeah.
And we also see one really weirdly shaped long-ass rug.
These people in their rugs, dude. What are they, free in the future?
Evidently so.
God almighty.
I think it's a rug. I have no other way to describe it than a rug.
So. I mean, yeah, that works for me.
A rug is a rug.
Yeah.
They like their rugs.
Yeah, there are so many goons in this shot, man.
Not only are there thousands of these Harkonnen soldiers, I don't know if you looked at their little salute that they give him.
Mm-hmm.
It's the silliest fucking thing ever. They clasp their hands over their heads and they just fucking shake their hands back and forth. And it looks so dumb. And I don't know if you... So, as our listeners may know at this point, you and I will go back and forth through a section of a movie several times. I think I found a fuck up in the filming, in the choreography of all of this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, Rabin gets the medallion. Vladimir floats away. Mm-hmm. We get a wider shot of Rabin just kind of like standing, and then he does his like salute thing or whatever that he does.
Okay.
But we see on the right side of the screen, there's one of the goons on the stage with him, just already doing the like celebration thing.
Oh, yeah.
Way before he should be doing it. Meanwhile, all of the ones standing behind Rabin are just like standing still. And none of the other people in the audience in front of Rabin have like started doing the thing yet. So it's just weird because it's like, you know how you go and you watch a performance and then there's one person that starts like clapping way too early.
Sure.
Yeah. It was basically that. I just thought it was funny.
You know, it's the Harkonnens are canonically a very shaved people.
Yes. Also very pale people.
Very
not
pale.
Not unlike myself.
Very pale. I'm very not shaved.
That pale and disgusting, though.
It's hard to tell the ages of the Harkonnens.
Yeah, they're either like 20 or 80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the one goon that is celebrating a little bit early, I mean, goons of a certain age are always, you know, subject to premature celebrations, John.
Oh, my God. The Dune Minute Podcast, everyone.
You just want to end it now?
Yep. All right. We're done with season two.
Sorry. Oh, God. I don't know if you, as you were talking, I don't know if you saw that joke formulated in my head.
I saw something.
Anyways. All right. Anyway, it's a good show. Well, it's a good show.
Irulan then continues with her diary entry. In the shadows of Arrakis lie many secrets, but the darkest of them all may remain the end of House Atreides. Yeah. And we get, in my opinion, one of the cooler shots of this movie where we are no longer on the surface of the planet. We are in space.
Mm-hmm.
We're floating in orbit above Arrakis, and we see the two moons, the Hand of God and Muad'Dib,
mm-hmm.
beginning to eclipse the sun.
Yeah.
And we see this giant shadow falling over the planet.
Yep.
We transition from that into the familiar, like, prescience-themed, you know, blue to red kind of filter and everything, and we sure. get a loud swell of music. Dune Part yep. 2.
We finally get the title.
Yes.
I had not realized we had not gotten a title screen up until this point. This, you know, in my time, this was probably like 45 minutes worth of note taking. but in movie time, this is only, you know, 2.5 minutes.
Yep. But this mirrors very closely, you know, what we saw with Dune Part 1.
Yep.
We had opening exposition and everything from Chani. You know, we had some shots of the Harkonnen spice harvesters and of Rabin again
yeah.
at the beginning. So, you know.
That's true. Very, very true.
I'm very interested to see how Dune Messiah's opening is going to be.
I would have to assume something in line with this.
We'll see.
We shall see.
Do you think it's going to be like the Dune sci-fi miniseries where we just get strange voiceover from adult Leto the Second, but it's not Leto the Second, but it's not James McAvoy or whoever it is that they cast?
I always thought it was just Leto the First giving the voiceover for that.
Not for the Messiah part.
Oh, for Children of Dune. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Children of Dune Part 1 is Messiah.
Yeah. Maybe.
But yeah.
We'll see.
Who knows?
So from the title screen, we fade to black, and then we hear good old Timmy Chalamet as Paul taking up the voiceover mantle from Princess Irulan, and he is talking to the embryonic visions of his sister.
Yeah.
Cool. That's normal.
Well, I don't know if you know this. Paul is a very normal person. And I'm not a doctor, but I know how to do a Google search for embryonic development stages.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do a pretty good look at one picture and look at another picture and kind of compare and, you know, match A to B.
You had Highlights magazine as
yeah,
a kid.
Yeah. Really fucking excelled at Where's Waldo.
You read all the Goofus and Gallant stories. Am I unlocking some memories in your head right now?
I'm just thinking back to my Mad magazine.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you're a little
fucking.
I was a little more wholesome than you, I guess, as a child.
Yeah, I was an edgy kid. No, but it looks like, you know, bearing in mind, I'm not a doctor. Especially not a souk doctor.
Sure.
I don't have a cool diamond tattoo on my forehead. But it looks like Jessica is anywhere from 5 to 10 weeks pregnant based on what we see of Alia here. Also, okay. I don't know if you noticed, but like you can see the blood like flowing through the veins in Alia.
Sure.
It is really weird. I wonder.
The human body's amazing, John.
Yeah. No, it's crazy.
Okay. So does that fit kind of in the timeline of the of where we are? So we first get mention of Jessica being pregnant way back on Caladan.
Mm-hmm. Which we know was a while because Duncan had left for Arrakis about a month before the rest of Atreides had left Caladan.
Yep.
If Paul had... No, Paul told Jessica that he knew that she was pregnant on Arrakis, not on Caladan. Because Paul
you
had,
are right. You're
because
right.
Paul had to have his first moment with the spice.
Right. Yes. Sorry, I'm completely wrong. So yeah, it's after the harvester scene where he's back.
But in that scene, Jessica had said
stop
to
your
Paul,
emails now. We corrected ourselves. Yeah.
But in that scene, Jessica had said to Paul, "How do you know that? I barely knew that myself."
Yeah.
Now, we have to understand that Jessica is Bene Gesserit. She has full awareness of everything that's going on inside of her body. Mm-hmm. But if we take our real world understanding of how, and I recognize that I'm a fucking dude talking about how women know when they're pregnant, so don't at me on this. But generally speaking, most women...
From your understanding of this.
Yeah. Generally speaking, from my understanding, most women understand that they're pregnant around the 6-week mark.
Okay. So safe to say Jessica would know before then.
Yep. Now, we don't know how many days it's been between when Paul and Leto went out to the harvester with Dr. Liat Kynes,
mm-hmm.
and then when the attack happened. We don't get... Well...
I'm sure we could probably do that math.
It could have been that day because we see Yue come in later on with the sleeping pills and Paul's just still in his room or whatever.
Yeah, he says this was just an allergies thing.
Yeah.
The attack could have been that night.
Yeah.
So I think that lines up fairly well.
Yeah.
You said what, 5 to 6 weeks?
Five to 10 weeks for Alia.
Right, in this moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That passes a sniff test.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably a little bit of an accelerated timeline because that's, again, we're going to see a lot of accelerated timelines throughout this movie.
We're going to fuck with the timelines a lot in this movie.
But okay, I'd buy that.
Yeah.
I'd buy that this is the correct, or at least vicinity of correct embryonic development stage. Cool.
The more you know.
Good job, production team. Thumbs up.
We did it.
So what does Paul say or begin to say?
He basically says to Alia, look, father's dead. Shouldn't you just join him among the stars? This world is cruel, and I don't think I'll have enough time to prepare it for your arrival.
Cool.
Granted, that's a summarization. It's not the actual. But he's basically like, hey, stop. Just go back to not existing. You're not, this world isn't ready for you.
Yeah.
And I can't promise that it will be.
Okay. A very normal thing to say to an embryo.
I'm afraid I won't have enough time to fix things before you're coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's about where our minute ends.
Yeah. That. Yep.
I haven't really given many book notes because none of this happens.
None of
in
this
the books.
Happens. Yep.
So I'll let y'all know when we pick back up where the book is.
It's not here.
Yeah, it'll be maybe next week or the week after that is where we start.
Week after.
Yeah, I think it's the week after is where we start kind of getting back into book land. All right, cool. Anything else from your notes on this one?
Nothing.
Anything
on
from
this,
the Art and Soul?
Nope.
Okay.
Surprisingly, there was nothing about the embryo in Art and Soul. So.
All right, cool. Well, let's pick this back up tomorrow.
All righty. As always, you can find us online. We are at Dune Minute on Blue Sky. You can email duneminute@gmail.com. And you can also find the Dune Minute available on YouTube. It's just the audio. There's no video. But, we make it available wherever you find your podcasts, whether it's, podcast feeds or YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're there. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute, though. We'll see you then.
All right. See ya.